Now you're all in big, big trouble.
Suspect.
This is how I went.
All right, we are back here for another edition of the Watch It Podcast. And as promised, it was going to be an MMA heavy week. I briefly touched upon UFC 280 in the last episode, but very recently, I wasn't able to get him on last week as I was traveling to the Florida Keys, but we have Torres Finney joining us once again, the Punisher himself. Torres, man, what's going on?
Jake, man, happy to be back here once again, brother, man. You know, I'm just back here in Macon, man, chilling, relaxing after a strenuous 8-week fight camp, man. But, man, I'm feeling good, so definitely when I get back, I'll be getting back, and we'll be getting back to work, baby.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, good to hear that you're over in Macon having a good time. So tell me a little bit about the experience down in Savannah again. I know it's your second time with the Icon Fighting Championship. That's Jorge Masvidal's promotion for anyone who's not familiar. I know you had a great time at that first event. You didn't have a lot of seafood, though. I remember you talking about. Was that amended this time?
Yes, man, I actually had a lot of seafood this time, on my return back to Savannah, man. It was really fun, man. You know, we actually had an opportunity. We had a house in Hilton Head we stayed at. So we stayed there and we traveled back and forth to Savannah. You know, it was only about 45 minutes to an hour back to Savannah. So, you know, that's why I was staying at throughout the weekend, throughout the week for the fights. But, man, it was really exciting, man. It was really exciting to get that opportunity and be able to have fun, and I enjoyed it, man. I really loved it. That was a really good show, man. And once again, you know, I was blessed to go out there and be able to deliver.
Damn, man. And deliver you did. It was an incredible fight, a little bit different than some of your other fights I saw you talk about on Instagram. It went a little bit farther into the fight than your previous three. So tell me a little bit about the opponent, because I was trying to do some research beforehand, couldn't find too much. So what did you know about him going into the fight, and what were you specifically looking for with your fight camp and everything? And once you got into the octagon, just tell me a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, you know, the opponent, his name was Ivan Batnich. You know, Ivan is he was 5-1. He was a tough opponent. You know, what's funny was he trained at AKA, American Kickboxing Academy, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Trained with, you know, Islam. And he said he's the first guy he ever sparred when he got into the gym, I think in 2011 or 12, was DC.
Wow.
You know, was one of the guys he ever sparred. You know, he was one of the main training partners for Luke Rockhold. He had actually a lot of hype behind his name, man. He was, you know, UFC had their eyes on him as well, from what I was told. And he was a solid opponent. He went on Bellator. He got a Bellator win. He was on a 3-fight win streak. So he was in a solid position. And you know, my goal was just going in to get the job done. You know, I felt really confident about the matchup. And you know, he brought a different thing to the fight that I hadn't seen before. Not necessarily hadn't seen before, but I haven't really fought a southpaw before, baby, mm-hmm. Be honest with you. And he was southpaw, so, you know, just be mindful of that. But he was the best wrestler, per se, I fought so far, because he has a little extensive wrestling background. Plus, at the gym he trains at, they're very, for them to be called American Kickboxing Academy, they're very grapple heavy. Mm-hmm. So he was more grapple heavy in his other fights, but I was able to go out there and neutralize his entire skill set, man. You know, he actually is the aggressive grappler to the guys he fight, but in this fight, I was the aggressive grappler, and you know, he couldn't out grapple me, and I had a lot of control, you know, a lot of good positions. I was very dominant, really, the whole fight. I mean, the fight was never close. It was never out of my hand, not once. It was just, you know, the fight just was able to prolong. He was very defensive in a lot of areas. And, you know, props to him for being defensive in a lot of areas. I just didn't think he garnered enough offense. But, you know, I was overall was able to find a way to get into the third round, turn up the pace a little bit. That was a good thing about him. My cardio was better than his, and find a way to get the finish in the third round.
Yeah, man, it was impressive. I was watching this on my phone on UFC Fight Pass. I was down in the Florida Keys for work last week when this was going down, or 2 weeks ago, rather. And, yeah, man, pretty much what you just said, you described it well. And, you know, you talk about some of the fighters that he had trained with. You know, you mentioned DC and Luke Rockhold. That's two legends right there that bleed into that skill set. So that's incredible that was something that you were able to go out and get the W against. And, you know, were you able to talk to Jorge Masvidal at all after the fight or anything?
Yes, I was able to talk to Jorge after the fight. I talked to him and his manager and, you know, the head guy, first round management, who's also, you know, a part of managing me along with my agent, Ray. Yeah, I was able to talk to him. And Jorge was he was really excited, man. He was really excited. He's like, man, you're a monster. You're a beast right now, man. He said, you know, I think you're already UFC ready. And, you know, he was telling me about obviously a little small few kinks I can definitely work on for sure. But Jorge was really excited, and man, he thinks I'm going to be the future, man. And I'll tell you one thing: we'll see how we see how everything goes from now. There is some talks right now about certain things towards the UFC, but I might have to get one more fight in, and it could be sooner than later. I don't know. We actually just talked about certain things yesterday, so I could be stepping in that cage a little bit sooner than I expect. But it's for the purpose. There's a lot of eyes on me right now, and I'm really close. That's what one thing I can say. I am really close. So if this is what it takes, then so be it. Because this is the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to get in and become a champion. So I'm close. So we'll see. You know, definitely still talking with management team and seeing everything that comes into play. But we're getting closer and closer by the day.
Yeah, man, that's awesome to hear. I mean, I totally agree with everything that you just said there. I feel like you're well on the way to going down that path. I got a couple questions from what you just said. The first of that is you mentioned that, you know, Jorge, he gave you a couple tips and about the kinks in your game and everything. What is that like to receive just advice from a guy who is as legendary as Jorge Masvidal? Tell me about that.
Well, man, it was really exciting because, you know, Jorge himself, you know, I've trained in the same room as Jorge. I mean, I went to American Top Team, had opportunity to train with all those guys, you know, him there with Bo and Christoph Joka and Sidney Outlaw and, you know, all those guys. I got opportunity to train with a lot of top tier guys there at that gym. So it was fun. And, you know, listening to Jorge, because, you know, a lot of people don't understand, like, Jorge is actually a really big wrestling fan. Mm-hmm. He loved it. So that type of style of fight, he really enjoyed it because, like I said, he's a big fan of guys like, you know, Habib and, you know, those guys that are grind on you and take your soul away until you want to quit. So, and I love those type of styles. That's what a lot of people don't understand. You know, I love those type of styles. And now with me, I'm more in the Hazmat field. You know, I want to ground on you, but I want to get you out quicker. So I like how Hazmat does it. He likes to grind them, but he likes to get them out quick. Because his style is very similar. But, you know, with Habib, you know, and Islam, you know, they'll take their time. And I will take my time. This is a good fight for me to do that. And, you know, it's obviously when you know you're in control, there's no reason to rush certain situation because eventually he's going to open up. He's going to continue to make mistakes. He's breathing heavy. He's heavy. His arms are heavy. Everything is tough for him. So as time go on, you're eventually going to take him out. And once you do that, you know, it'll be in your favor. But it was good to get some real good advice from Jorge. Plus it was a little bit uplifting because at first, walking out the cage, even though I know I got the finish, I wasn't too pleased with the performance per se because I thought I could have had multiple opportunities to get a finish quicker. You know, I thought there was some moments in the second round I knew I could have went for, but that's just me getting with experience. You know, I've been fighting, like I said, since 2011 or 12. You know, how long is that? It's almost over 10 years. Mm-hmm. And compared to me, I've only been fighting MMA entirely for 2 years, you know, exactly. So I am I'm still very young in the game. I just turned 24 three days ago. So, you know,
happy, and obviously, happy late birthday.
Oh, thank you, brother.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. So, and like I said, obviously, you know, obviously no excuse for it, but, you know, I'm still learning a lot of the things. Like when I get in the cage, the thing is about me, though, I am getting more comfortable and comfortable. Like, when I walk in a cage, man, it's like there used to be times. I remember my early amateur career, you know, heck, even earlier this year, my first pro fight, when I walk in a cage, my heart is thumping. Mm-hmm. I'm like, freak. But now when I walk in a cage, it's, I'm about as calm as it can get. And I'm like, I'm ready to go. You know, I'm not even, I run to the cage because I'm ready to get in there. But man, I am not as, I'm confident because I understand my plan. And, you know, me and my coach, Matt, you know, we talk about it. When you go into the cage, knowing exactly what you're going for, knowing exactly what you're trying to do, knowing exactly what you need to do to get there, it becomes a little bit more comfortable because you don't go in there basically winging it. Because when you go in there winging it, you have to think more about it. You know, you're a little nervous because it is the fight of the unknown. Every time you step into the cage, it's the unknown. So you don't know what's going to happen when you get in there. But I think if you have a game plan of what to garner towards, it becomes easier to be able to go in there and settle down because, you know, I need to do this, this, and this. If I do this, this, and this, this is my keys to victory. And then let's say even if you get to those keys to victory and the fight still hasn't ended yet, you just repeat the process until you eventually break them and get the win. So, you know, I felt, like I said, I felt really confident there, and Jorge did give me some good tips. So it was good to listen to him. And, you know, we went back and, you know, watch the film and make some adjustments. So definitely next fight, it'll for sure be an even better Torres thing.
Yeah, man. And like I already said, it was already, I know you said you weren't happy with the performance, and I'm glad that you went back. You got those notes with your team and everything. It obviously, like with all your fights, it's such a distinct style to me that it just always is impressive when you go out there and you're able to do what you do. It's seriously awesome, man. And you mentioned something that I just find incredibly fascinating about the sport of MMA as a whole, where you have your keys to the fight. You know, there's these things that you need to hit, and if it doesn't happen, you need the repeat. And, you know, we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but pretty much the final three fights of UFC 280, it was clear that's the game plan about how the sport works. But we'll get into that in a little bit. I know you mentioned that you're looking to be back into the octagon sooner rather than later. Would that be back with Icon, or would that be perhaps with another promotion?
So that probably could be with Icon one more time. You know, it's in talks. We don't know a lot with I actually just got some information yesterday because I am very close to towards, you know, trying to get into the UFC. So it's a fight that they really want me to take right now. So we'll see how that we're still talking on details on that. But we'll see how that goes. But that could be before this year ends. You know, it's funny to me. Every time I talk and say I'm done for the year, you know, I was done for the year, you know, three months ago. my management team said, hey, you know, we get three fights on a year and we'll be done, you know, because three fights is actually a lot for MMA fighters.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was like, well, the UFC has eyes on you. They want you to take this, you know, take a step up in your competition. I said, okay, no problem. I did that. I fought. I was like, okay. They said, UFC, I was really big on you. And then now it's like, oh my goodness, you're this close. They want you to get this one more. And there has been talks that this next upcoming fight, there will be UFC guys there to actually watch me fight. So it's, like I said, it's all talks right now. So we'll see on how that decision be made. If we could probably get it pushed to next year, if so, but it might be. So I don't know. We're still talking, but that's the news right now.
Oh, that's exciting, man. That's really exciting. So how does that work? You know, when is it similar to, I guess, to use a comparison to another sport, you have, you know, scouts and football and baseball. Is it similar to that? Is it a little bit more complicated? Because is there a certain kind of liaison that you have with the UFC? How do you hear about all of this?
Well, you know, with first round management, they have really close connections, you know, with the UFC. So, they're able to get a lot of different things. And so I'll basically go ahead and spill a little bit of it, all right? So the next Icon show is going to be in Orlando, all right? If anybody know about the UFC fight night, that's going to be in Orlando.
That Clay Guida's fighting that night.
That's right. Yes, he is. That's right. It's going to be on December 3rd. Icon would be on December 2nd.
Wow.
Meaning it would be Dana White looking for a fight show. So he would be in attendance there himself. And him and Mick and all those guys and Dan. So it would be a really, it would be a really, really big fight. And they signed guys off that, especially guys that they have already paid our own. So, and obviously, yes, definitely, I would love to fight on those type of opportunities. And, you know, definitely don't want to turn that down. But as my management, you know, it's all talk to me and my coaches and my management team. You know, this would be my fifth fight on the year. So, you know, how many first year pros, you know, have five fights in 1 year?
That has to be some kind of record, man.
Five fights in 1 year, you know, and literally just turned pro last year. So, you know, it's just, well, my first pro fight was this year, but like who I would have never thought five fights in 1 year. That is unreal. I was thinking I would barely get three and let alone to be able to fight a fifth. So, but hey man, we're this close and so be it, you know, I'm confident in it. So we'll see on what happens with that, man. But it's a really exciting opportunity. So we'll just continue to move forward. But I'm leaning more to fight, to be honest with you, since I'm so close. Because I tell you, if I do fight in December, I'm probably not fighting again until April or May.
Well, man, I can only imagine what that feels like to be so close to that. It's awesome. And, you know, it would speak to Agogi again, man, it would be another big time UFC opportunity for those guys. So how has that been with Agogi, you know, post the Trevor Peak ascension and everything that's going on with you now?
Man, it's been really good, man. Agogi has been really growing, man. We got a lot of teammates that have been fighting. You know, actually this weekend we have on October 29th, we have some amateurs fighting. We got Luke Wilson, you know, we have him fighting. We have Josh Booker, he's fighting. And we have one more. I'm going blank.
Is this an Aries card?
On the Aries card, yes. And we have one more. Can't think. But yeah, we have a lot of guys fighting. Then in November, we have Andrew Sturdivant, Carter Beekman, Chance Gilbride, Brevin Sullivan. We have all those guys fighting. So so right now, man, we're growing big, man. We're doing a lot of big things at the gym. Everybody's going there, they're getting better. But yes, man, the gym has just been, you know, ecstatic. You know, that Trevor Peak fight, man, that was something else, man. Be able to sit there and watch him, you know, live and watch that fight, man. It was just, oh my goodness, that fight was just next level, man. And it was fun to watch. I remember we had the whole gym there, basically standing there on the bleachers, had the TV on the mat. We removed the mats, put the TV there, and man, we were sitting there watching, man. And yes, I will say that first round had us all nervous. Had us all. Oh my gosh! But man, we know Trevor Peak really well, man. You're gonna have to kill the man to get him out of there. So that second round was something to really watch. And man, he came through. He really came through in that one. So I'm really excited for Trevor, man. I think he'll be fighting obviously next year, but it'll probably early next year. So definitely excited to see his UFC debut. You know, he had an opportunity with me and him both. He took me to the UFC PI with him when he went for the first time. And man, what an exciting trip that was. We got an opportunity to train at Extreme Couture. Man, it's been really exciting to see his pathway throughout the UFC. Because the great thing about it, you know, he started at the beginning of the year in January. You know, he started earlier this year against David Robbins. Mm-hmm. I remember commentating that fight. You know, I commentated that fight when he fought David Robbins. And, you know, little did we know that he'll be 7-0 four fights later, you know, in the UFC. So, You know, that's big, man. And he took the path. You know, he fought David, then he went on, fought Warren, then he fought Kama Worthy. And then in 4 weeks, they said, hey, you got Malik Lewis. And then, man, he was ready to go.
Yeah, so, man. I remember I had him on the podcast. I think it was a couple days before the Kama Worthy fight. And you talk about confidence going into a fight against a UFC veteran. It was there. So it makes sense when it bleeds into that Dana White Contender Series fight that continued to go. And, I mean, I hear the same kind of confidence with you when you talk about your fights and everything like that. So I'm just incredibly excited to see what happens, not only just with you, but with the rest of the team over there at Agogi. Because, I mean, it's serious, serious potential just everywhere you look, every corner of that gym, man. I just feel like there's new talent growing and popping up every day.
Yes, man, I agree with you, man. Yeah, every time you look up, man, you're like, man, this place has some talent, man. And it's growing because a lot of people don't expect it, you know. The more you continue to watch, you'll be like, man, these guys are just getting better and better and better. And it just randomly out of nowhere, man, you look and you see it, and it's like, man, where did these guys come from? Like, you know, we got this guy named Isaiah Parker. You know, Isaiah, he's currently 2-0 as an amateur, and you see the growth in him. You're like, man, he's gonna be a killer as he continues. Josh Booker, I tell people a lot about Josh. You know, he's defending his title this weekend. Josh is currently 3-0, and he's had tough fights, and he's won them all, man. And he's had two fight of the nights because they've been so tough. He's been fighting killers, and he's got another tough one, you know, this weekend. So you look at Josh, you know, Josh was like a dark horse. You know, Josh was a guy, like, he's a tough fighter, but you didn't think, okay, Josh would be coming up as a pro and be the next guy up. But now he's like one of the next guys up now. You're like, man, like, that's the type of feel you want. You want guys to be able to come in, you know, work hard, be a part of, because Josh has worked so hard. He's got so much better. Be a part of the culture and rise up to the crop. You know, I look at it a lot, like, a little bit with AKA, you know, with Habib and all those guys. You know, not definitely trying to say we're exactly like them, but I look at how everybody has their plan. You know, they all have a very similar plan, and they all stick to it. Why do you think all their records are so similar? Habib 29-0, Islam, what, 23-24-1, you know, Umar Nurmagomedov 17-0, something like that. You know, the other one, like, 18-1, like, they all record so similar, because, and you look at the way they finish their record, everybody finishes all their guys so similar, like, because they all have a plan and they stick to it. So, and when people think of Agogi, they think of, oh, they're really grapple heavy. Well, go ahead and think that. I mean, we can really strike. That's the thing. We have really high level of striking in our gym, but you can't even stop our first entry. So, I mean, you know, and if that's the easiest way to go in there and win. You know, I looked at this interview yesterday when Javier Mendez was talking about Islam, and they say he's one of the least hit fighters in the history of the UFC. And you think about that, and his pathway, he don't had over 25 fights in his career, and he's been hit. The most times he's been hit, significant strikes, was 9 by Charles Oliveira. So you're telling me the most times he's ever been hit in a fight is 9 times? And throughout his entire career, 9 times? I'll take that career any day. Yeah. So I'll take that any day.
Yeah, absolutely,
so,
man.
Get in and get out. And, you know, definitely to hit somebody and not get hit. So.
Yeah, definitely, man. And while we're kind of on that similar topic with that, I think now would be a good time that I want to get your thoughts on UFC 280 here, because that was a crazy card that we had, starting with really everything, even going back to the prelims. We had Bilal Muhammad and everybody. It was a wild event that they put on last Saturday.
Yes, man, what an event. You know, I did all my picks on the card. And I actually got every fight right, except for the Caitlin Chukagan and, oh my goodness, can't think of the girl she fought.
Oh, yeah, the French, it's slipping me too.
I cannot think of her name, but Florida, it's Florot, something like that. But I got that fight wrong. I picked Chukagan. I just thought she would continue to keep that number one spot, but she came up short, so. But I actually got every single fight wrong. And even though one of the fights I did not think you won, I got correct. which, you know, the Sean O'Malley fight. But man, yeah, I actually, when I saw the Bilal Muhammad Sean Brady fight, you know, I picked Bilal Muhammad. I thought he was just going to decision him with his volume. Mm-hmm. But Bilal fought a different way. He fought on his front foot, because Bilal actually fights on his back foot a lot. He fought on his front foot. He was aggressive. And then, you know, I think that was his first TKO finish in the UFC.
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It was so funny because you see him have Sean Brady hurt, and he doesn't even like attack him at first. Habib has to tell him, go, Bilal, like, go, you can go finish him. And like, it was funny seeing that because, I mean, they call him Bilal, remember the decision, Muhammad. So, I mean, he loves a decision win. I think he got like 21 wins and like 17 of them are by decision. So, I mean, that's the only way I saw him winning, and I was shocked to see him get the KO, but I did pick Muhammad in that one, and the rest of them I got correct. And yeah, the Yan and O'Malley fight, man. What's your thoughts on that one? Man.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, man, because I thought it was a great fight, first of all. I think it winning fight of the night was more than justified. I thought it was great. I thought it was going to be a quicker fight for Petr Yan. That did not, it was kind of the opposite case. O'Malley really led big time in that significant strike category, which is in the UFC, as you probably know, extremely important for a lot of the judges. But I didn't think it was going to weigh so heavy that O'Malley was going to be the one who ended up winning the fight. I was stunned when that result came out. And I feel like Sean, do you see the look on his face? He was a little bit shocked by the result that came out, because he only had 2 seconds of ground control, where I think for Piotr, it was like over 5 minutes.
It was nearly six. Like, I'm sitting there watching, and I saw his reaction, O'Malley, then he says on the mic, you know, I was just trying to, you know, recalibrate from this tough fight. Dude, you shocked yourself because you won. Your body system was like, what the world? They actually gave me that fight. You know, like, Young, and I see Petr Yan, you know, he's mad. He's talking about he want to be released from UFC because they have done him wrong the last two fights. Like, I can make a case. You know, he did beat Aljamain Sterling in that second fight. You can make a case. For sure he beat Sean O'Malley. Yeah, like,
you can make a pretty great case for that.
I know. Like, I understand people want to talk about. So round two, in my opinion, obviously it was easily Petr Yan. All right, round one was the toss-up. When I was watching live, I gave it to Petr Yan. But let's just say, for devil's advocate, okay, for sure, Sean O'Malley. Because two judges did give round one to Sean. Mm-hmm. So, all right, so we get round one to Sean. So it's 1-1 going into the third. I understand the damage O'Malley did with the knee to the head, which busted Yan open. All right? Yan took him down, all right? And controlled him for every bit about at least a minute and a half towards 2 minutes. All right. Plus, everything on the feet was pretty even besides that knee. Like, and there was a time when I think he didn't necessarily like stun O'Malley, but he clipped O'Malley really hard in that third. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to figure out, like, and then he finished the fight even on top. Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, how could they give that third round to O'Malley? Because I don't think he won the third round.
Yeah.
Like, I was pretty confident that Yan won the third round. Now, if you want to give him the first round, you give it to him. You can give O'Malley the first round, because I didn't think he won on first round. But so be it. But I for sure knew he won the second, and I could have sworn he won the third. Man, I could have sworn he won the third. Like, I don't see how in the world, and I rewatched it. I don't see how they gave round three. I don't know. Like, because the way they talk about how they judge the fight, you know, damage is damage better than control?
Mm-hmm.
But if you could be in control, so if I control you more than you damage me, how much does that damage outweigh the control? You know, like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Weird fight.
Exactly. I mean, you said it there. It just comes down to what the judges prioritize as being significant You know, I would like to see. I haven't had a chance to directly look at the scorecards yet. I'd like to, but it was a little bit of a head scratching fight, and the fight after that it was disappointing for pretty much everybody who wanted to see Aljo and TJ, because TJ came into the fight with a pretty significant shoulder injury, like he said in that post fight press conference. What were your thoughts on that between him and Aljo?
Talking about O'Malley and Aljo,
TJ Dillashaw and Aljamain Sterling.
I'm sorry. Man, so thinking about that fight in itself, I wasn't too much of a I wasn't too much of a fan of TJ going in, but I think you have to think about it in the fighter's way and a fan way. Okay, as a fighter, I understand TJ's thought process. Okay, I understand his reasoning. You're fighting for the world title, all right? TJ on the older side. If TJ pulls out, he might not ever fight for that title ever again. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw what happened with Tony Ferguson. You know, even though, yes, he fought for an interim, I understand, but he never got a chance to fight for the actual world title. You know, multiple times, he constantly, things just kept happening. So, and it just, you know, obviously, you know, they thing with him and Habib. So sometimes you just don't want to take that chance. Sometimes you want to go in there injured. You know, you're like, man, I think I can do what I can do, you know, to beat this guy. And then TJ said he kept talking about it in the conferences that he wanted to keep it on the feet. Like, that's why he kept talking about you trying to entice Aljamain to just stand with him, mm-hmm. you know, because he knew he couldn't grapple with Aljamain with his hurt shoulder. And, you know, and I pick Aljo to win. I'm a big Aljo fan. I like Aljo. I like his style. But they call Aljo the luckiest champion ever, man. You look at it, you're like, man, he gets the title off of an illegal knee. He beats Peter Young by one of the really wild split decision. And then you go against a hurt TJ Dillashaw. I'm a big fan of him. You know, he beat him. Hey, you go in there the way you go in. I'm sorry, I can't help that you the one that came in there injured. I don't fault Aljo for that. I'm just saying, like, the circumstances. But if I'm in Aljo's shoes, hey, the heck with it. You came in there hurt, I'm gonna fight you that way. I'm gonna target that. You know, you can't not fight somebody hard because they're hurting. You know, heck, and even during the fight, Aljo allowed multiple times, like, he backed off TJ to let him, like, fix his shoulder in the second round if he, like, you know, shake his shoulder out. But, you know, you can't do that. I mean, you know, you got to just fight the man the way he is. But I have been hearing talks about a Henry Cejudo Aljamain, and I don't know, man. Yeah. All I can tell you this, it's like, if Henry hadn't fought in about 3 years, so it depends on how he comes out, but I think that matchup favored Henry Cejudo a lot, because Henry is better in every aspect, in my opinion. Probably, except the jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. Except the jiu-jitsu. But wrestling, striking, is I don't know how that fight would go for Aljo. But I hope he will win that one, but I don't know. I don't think he can.
Yeah, staying in bantamweight, going back to our last fight, what do you think's next for Sean O'Malley? I thought that it might be time for a title shot, I guess, going against that, against Aljamain Sterling. But if they have the Henry Cejudo match, I feel like that's something that they're going to make. But I just wonder what they're going to do with Sean now.
I don't think Sean should fight for the title right now. I think he should wait. I think he needs one more fight, because, you know, if you think about it, every time Sean O'Malley has gotten that big-time fight, you know, when he had opportunity against Cheeto, you know, hurt his foot. Then he had Pedro Munhoz and Napo. So, like, something kept coming up, you know. And, yes, he got the win. Look, he won the fight. He proved that he does belong up there with the top-tier guys. But I don't know if he's better than Cheeto Vera right now. Mm-hmm. I think Cheeto Vera should be next in line. You know, I understand O'Malley beat, you know, Jan, you know, former title champion, former title contender. Like, I don't think he just get it just yet. I know they're trying to push O'Malley onto us. I know they're trying to make him the next big star, but O'Malley is not it right now for me. He needs more. He's proven that he's amongst the top guys, but after a fight like that, man, he just needs one more. That's all I would say. He needs one more.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I feel like there is something just missing there. But now I definitely want to get your thoughts on that lightweight title fight between Islam Makhachev and Charles Oliveira. I think I had told you this last time you were on, that I'm a huge Charles Oliveira guy. I also really like Islam Makhachev. I thought that this was the clear fight to make of everything that we could have possibly had. And to me, I know some people were slightly disappointed by this fight, but I totally disagree with that. I thought this fight was everything I wanted and even a little bit more. To see Islam Makhachev come out and dominate like that, submit Charles Oliveira, absolutely impressive from him.
Well, the reason why everybody was disappointed because people didn't want to accept the facts. So I saw that there was a lot of people rooting for Charles Oliveira, mainly because of the way Khabib was talking, mainly the way Islam was talking, and I believed him. I was like, most of the time when these guys decide to say they're going to go out there and just absolutely smash these guys, it's not going to be close. They usually go out there and do it. And I believe what Islam said, because I said, Oliveira, if you think about this, if you think about the matchup in itself, Oliveira got taken down by Kevin Lee. Kevin Lee was able to take down Oliveira and hold him down. Now, yes, he did get subbed in the later rounds. Very similar to that same triangle he tried to throw up on Islam. But guess it's a little different when you got an actual grapple-heavy guy that understands grappling positions. Islam and Khabib, they really understand those positions. So it's different compared to a Kevin Lee or a Tony Ferguson, you know, grappling with those type of guys. I'm telling you, man, I just knew Islam was going to be really, really heavy on top of Oliveira once he got on top. And the fight went exactly how I expected. Now, I thought it would be more drowning. I thought he would finish him in like the fourth round, later in the round. But he drowned him quick because you saw Oliveira was breathing heavy. Oliveira was hesitant. That's the way he fought is the exact style I like. Like, he came out there very similar to my own opponent. They do all this different stuff against other guys, but when they fight you, they don't even do half of the stuff that they do against everybody else you've seen on film. When you see Oliveira gonna come out, he comes out heavy, aggressive, front kicks, jabs, throwing crosses right down the middle, off the back. It's basically a war from the moment the bell rings. He came out there, he threw a front kick, and then became hesitant. Barely threw anything. Like, he was hesitant on all his attempts at strikes. So I said to myself, I'm like, the fight's over. And people watch me, what do you say? I was like, it's over. I said, this one's going to win. Because Oliveira is not even fighting his fight. When you don't fight your fight because of the opponent you're going against, yes, you can win on that sometimes. But I say about 75% more times than not, you won't win that fight because you're not fighting your own fight. You're fighting a completely different fight that you're not accustomed to. And Oliveira doesn't fight that fight. He was waiting on the takedown from Islam the entire time, and that's what Islam wanted him to do. Islam put him on the cage. Islam got his trips. Islam got his throws. Got his takedown, and obviously you saw in the second round when he dropped him, as Islam said, when these guys drop Oliveira, they have no grappling. Mm-hmm. He said, who gives his black belt? So he's like, when I drop him, I'm going to get on top. And that's exactly what he did. And not only did he get on top, he submitted the number one submission finisher in UFC history out of Charles Oliveira in the second round. Who would have ever thought that? I did not think he'd win by submission. I'll tell you that right now. I did not see that happen.
No. Definitely, I did not think that either, man. Okay, so the overall result, all right, Makhachev coming out on top. That I wasn't too surprised by. A little bit, yeah, but not significantly. But to have it be a submission like that in the second round, that took me by surprise, man. Islam Makhachev, if people didn't know already, this dude is 1,000% the real deal. And I'm dying to know. Right when I saw all of this go down, you were one of the first people I thought of. When the matchup was announced between Alexander Volkanovski and Islam for the lightweight title, I immediately was like, I got to know what Torres thinks about this, man, because that is going to be, I don't know. I really have zero idea how that fight's going to go down.
So let me tell you something, brother. I'm going to tell you this, man. You know, I know everybody's pumped for that matchup, but I'm thinking this way, man. I don't see what Volk gonna be able to do.
I kind of agree with you, man. I think that's why. It's like everybody's like, oh man, this is gonna be a test for Islam. I'm like, yeah, is it? Are we sure? Alexander, but I don't know, man.
Like, what is Volk gonna be able to bring? Like, I know Volk in his interview was saying he's tough to take down. And if you do get the takedown, he's hard to hold down. He's gonna consistently keep getting back up. You know, if anybody seen the Islam versus Armin Tushakin fight, he took Tushakin down probably like 13 times in that fight because Tushakin kept getting up. It was one of the best grapple heavy MMA fights you'll probably see.
Yeah.
And he took that man down multiple times. Now, yes, this would be different over a 5-round fight. But, you know, this Islam has gotten so much better. Islam has a submission threat. Islam has a ground and pound threat. Volk, I'm gonna be this ain't Ortega you're going against, buddy.
Yeah, it's not Max Holloway again.
It ain't Max Holloway. This ain't the Korean zombie. I look at Volk, all right? Volk has crisp striking. His striking is incredible. The problem with Volk that I say, Volk, in my opinion, doesn't I don't think he has knockout power, but he's more of a volume striker, in my opinion.
Yes, I
agree. He hits you clean, but it's not enough to pitch you out. So if you got a guy that barely gets hit already, and if you ain't got that one hitter quitter, and your goal is going to be to volume Islam, then also have to deal with his grappling. I don't see the path to victory.
The way I see it is I have a hard time seeing it, yes. And I'm curious what will change with Volk moving up to 155. Not much, in my estimation.
It might be more powerful, maybe.
Maybe. But I don't know, because what you've said it pretty well is that Islam Makhachev has proven that he has just a incredible arsenal that he can use, and he's effective in every single category, every single one of them. Volk, if Makhachev takes Volk to the ground and Volk doesn't quickly get out of pretty much every takedown attempt that he does, this fight's over in maybe 2 rounds. There's no way, man. I can't see him being able to keep surviving the takedowns and the grappling, man. I just don't see it. And like I said, maybe there's something that I'm missing if he moves at the 155, because I seem to be, you and I, just from people I've talked to, are in the lower echelon of that school of thought, where all these people are like, man, Volk, I just don't, it's like the opposite way of thinking. And every time I'm just like, really? Is that really how you see it? I don't know, man. I'm curious to see what happens.
It's because everybody continue and the disrespect their style. A lot of people don't. I'm going to be straight up. A lot of people not. Well, I'm not going to say a lot of people, because more pure MMA fans like us, as you continue to watch, people are become real fans of the way Khabib fights, the way Islam fights. Heck, people are big fans of the way Khamzat fights. You know, like people like Khamzat because Khamzat is a little bit more of a quicker finisher than those guys. Their style, what's good about their style is because they are so dominant. What a lot of people don't like, I'm telling you, man, it's so funny just the way the world works. But people don't like dominance for some reason. People don't like consistent dominance. Mm-hmm. They want to see multiple people strive at the top. But in my opinion, I'm a fan of dominance. I'm a fan of Jon Jones. I don't care to see Jon Jones lose. I don't care to see Khabib lose. People want to see them just get absolutely tested. They want to see what happens if they get rocked and their legs are jello. I don't have to see that. I actually enjoy seeing them go out there and smash everybody they go against. You know, people actually, there was a time when people used to actually get bored of George St. Pierre. Not everybody adored GSP. Call him the greatest of all time. But there was a time, and I think you remember, there was a time when people used to call GSP just lay and pray. They didn't like him. He just didn't do anything. He was dominant. People used to actually cheer for Johnny Hendricks. They said, "Oh, Johnny Hendricks!" Like, come on, man. People just
tired of it. The times have changed. I mean, you look at another prime example of this was some of the buildup that went on with Kamaru Usman when he got knocked out by that head kick. It was the same thing where people, it just was the reaction to it was so weird, man, especially with Kamaru's winning streak and everything. And then when that happened, it's like people weren't ready for that to happen, even though they had been basically calling for it for months and years, really, at that point.
Yes, everybody wanted to see Usman lose. Everybody wanted to see Usman lose. Like, every time I kept hearing, Burns will beat him. Kobe will beat him. You know, Masvidal didn't have a full camp. Masvidal will beat him in a second. Like, I kept consistently hearing this, and I'm like, man, he's just on one of those runs right now. And heck, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to just tell you this straight up. I don't see Leon beating him a second time.
I also do not see that.
I don't see that happening, all right? I think Kamaru will stay more to his game plan and actually finish this. He won't make that mistake again. But if Leon is able to beat Usman, all right, that guarantees Hazmat the title. I'm sorry, Hazmat. Hazmat. Just go get Hazmat the title. I don't see. I'm sorry. I don't see how Leon beats the man.
Look, man. I'm not saying you're wrong.
I don't see because the Kobe fight, I'm really interested. I know people talk about Kobe's cardio, but and yes, Kobe has elite wrestling. It's good, but there's levels to this wrestling. I keep telling people this, man. Like, I've wrestled all my life. I can see the extra step in the level of wrestling. Hazmat is a much better wrestler than Kobe right now. I don't see what Kobe's gonna do, man.
Yeah.
I think he finishes Kobe within two rounds.
Two rounds, okay.
And I know that sounds crazy, but yes, because Hazmat's going to be much bigger than him. Hazmat's going to be so much more aggressive. Like, and plus, Kobe don't got knockout power. So Kobe's going to be on pace to finish Hazmat. You think? Now, I'm going to be shocked if I see Kobe take down Hazmat. That would shock me. But, man, I don't see what Kobe's gonna have for him, man. That's an exciting fight though. That's an exciting fight. I don't care. That's an exciting fight.
Yeah, man. I'm curious to see what goes down with that. I'm also curious to see what happens at 281 coming up with Izzy, Mike Chandler, Dustin Poirier. There's so much good MMA coming up, man. And even with you coming up, possibly maybe another fight soon in Orlando. We'll see what happens there.
See, yes, sir. That could be a possibility right now. So we'll see. It's all talks right now. But man, yeah, right now, man, MMA is at one of his peaks right now, man. I'm just a kid in the candy shop.
Well, man, we're running out of time here, but I want to be sure that people are able to connect with you on social media, connect with the TNT podcast. What's the best place to find you out there?
Definitely, man. You can always go to our podcast. We got the TNT podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Anchor, you name it, we're on it. And also, you can always go to my social media, you know, Punisher Torres, you know, on Twitter, Punisher Torres, on Snapchat, it's Punisher Torres all the way around. It probably is on Facebook. You got to put your actual name in, so it's just Torres.
you can change it to the Punisher if you want.
I might as well go and change it.
Well, Torres, man, thank you. Yeah, as your fan favorite here on the podcast, always good to have you on. Hope you come back soon, man.
Thank you, brother. Thank you very much, Jake. Thank you for all the opportunity every time.